This podcast of Which Way LA is made possible in part by City National Bank, committed to excellence in serving businesses with tailored financial solutions. On the web at cnb.com.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
Same-sex marriage and the Obama effect. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Record numbers of African Americans are expected to turn out in California next week to vote for Barack Obama. Will they vote for or against Prop 8, which would make same-sex marriage illegal? Many blacks oppose same-sex marriage, but they're also supporters of civil rights. We'll hear several voices tonight on what's being called the Obama effect. On Reporter's Notebook, the race for one of California's most powerful jobs, supervisor of Los Angeles County. First, here's the news. Warman Ali back with Which Way LA on KCRW. Supporters of Prop 8 to make same-sex marriage illegal say a big turnout of African Americans will help their cause. We'll hear a debate tonight about homophobia, religion, and civil rights. On Reporter's Notebook, Bernard Parks versus Mark Ridley Thomas, the race for supervisor of Los Angeles County. First, this story, if you're planning to vote by mail in Los Angeles County, be careful. Dean Logan is registrar recorder in charge of elections. Good to have you on our program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Busy time for you. You are swamped, as I understand it, by people who want to vote by mail. If they haven't gotten their ballots yet, what should they do?
Well, I think a couple of things. Obviously, we want to remind anybody who's voting by mail that their voted ballot does have to be returned to us by the time the polls close on Tuesday. So if you have your ballot, then you need to get it back in the mail to us probably by tomorrow's mail. Otherwise, you need to bring it into our office or to a poll site on Election Day. Now, with the pending requests, we are getting through those. We did a mail out today. We will mail out a final group of ballots tomorrow. Voters will likely receive those in their mail on Saturday or Monday. And again, they have time to vote them, but they just need to be sure that they are brought back here to our office or to a polling place so that we physically have them back before the polls close on Tuesday.
So unless, then, you get your mail-in ballot by today, don't mail it. Take it in.
That would be the best rule of thumb. What we don't want to do is for people to get a ballot, take the time to mark their ballot, and then have it arrive here too late to be counted.
Is there just an extraordinarily larger number of mail-in requests than there has been in the past?
There are. Everything about this election is at a higher level than we've ever seen before. It's not unusual to have late requests. The deadline to request a vote-by-mail ballot was Tuesday at midnight, and we received a lot of those even in our fax machines on Tuesday. So that's not unusual in an election, but the sheer volume for this election is more than we've dealt with in the past.
Okay, so if you haven't already got it, forget about mail is really the bottom line here.
Right. The other thing you can do is on our website at lavote.net, you can actually track your vote-by-mail request and your vote-by-mail ballot. So if you've already mailed back a ballot, you can track to make sure that we did, in fact, receive that, that it made it through the mail. If you've made a request and still haven't received your ballot, you can check, and it will let you know if that ballot has been mailed to you. So, of course, then the other options available to you are to vote here in person in our early voting program in Norwalk. We're open every day through Election Day, and, of course, the polls from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday.
What if you've mailed your ballot in, but it has not yet been received? What can you do about it?
Well, again, I would say check back, and if it's still showing on Tuesday that it hasn't been received, then you may want to go to a polling place and vote a provisional ballot. We try to update our system as frequently as possible, but I know that people are really anxious to be sure that their votes are received and counted in this election. And so, if in doubt, I would say go to a polling place and vote a provisional ballot, and then we can validate that during the canvass period.
All right. One of the busiest men in Los Angeles County, Dean Logan, the registrar recorder. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
You're listening to Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Warren Olney also hosts To the Point about issues of national concern. Weekdays at noon on KCRW, distributed nationwide by Public Radio International.
Warren Olney back with Which Way LA. Barack Obama is expected to produce a record turnout of African-American voters in California, and that could have an impact beyond the presidential election. Proposition 8 would overturn the state Supreme Court's ruling that same-sex marriage is a constitutional right. Prop 8 supporters say Obama's big turnout will favor a yes vote because blacks have conservative views about same-sex marriage. Obama himself is opposed to same-sex marriage, but he's also against Prop 8, which he calls divisive and discriminatory. Roland Stringfellow is a former Baptist minister who's at the Center for Gay and at the Center for Lesbian Gay Studies at the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley. Reverend Stringfellow, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Do you think that there will be what's being called an Obama effect, meaning for Prop 8 and against same-sex marriage?
Unfortunately, I believe there will be. I mean, I like to be optimistic, you know, around this, but I base my opinion upon my work within traditionally African-American congregations and just a lot of the anti-same-sex marriage rhetoric that I come up against, either in the public or from phone calls or just a variety of sources.
Is there homophobia? Is there religious objection? How would you describe it?
I would say it's definitely a combination of both, and I believe that African Americans in particular use particular passages of scripture. Many times people call them the clobber passages, but I think even beyond the clobber passages, people tend to feel that that being for someone who is homosexual or transgendered is being against Jesus Christ. And they point to particular passages that they really, you know, base that upon. And again, I feel that that's ludicrous, and I don't feel it's Christ-like at all to reject a family member, your own flesh and blood, simply because they want to live their life in authenticity and with integrity.
People against Proposition 8 say it's a civil rights issue. African Americans have been the principal or principal beneficiaries of civil rights laws. Is there a conflict there?
I believe that when it comes to getting people to see that discrimination across the board, you know, whether it's towards people of color, sexual minorities, whoever, that, you know, discrimination is discrimination and it's wrong. And, you know, part of the No on A campaign, speaks about it being unfair and wrong. And I believe that's the basis of it, is that, you know, due to the legal arguments, you know, that are built into our, you know, nation's constitution, that, you know, discriminating against people, that is what we're basing our argument upon. It's just wrong across the board.
Patrick Egan is a professor of politics at New York University who's been looking at voting patterns in this context, and he reports that when measures like this have been on the ballot, African-American voters do in advance indicate that they have very conservative views about same-sex marriage, but when they go into the voting booth, they generally vote in favor of it. Are you surprised at that?
I would not be necessarily, but I base that upon my own opinion upon helping people to understand that, you know, they actually do know someone who's gay or lesbian. Oftentimes, you know, that they'll vote against a measure supporting same-sex individuals or same-sex marriage or just homosexuality as a whole, because they feel that's not in my family, that's not a part of my life. But when they go into the voting booth, I really believe that's the hinge factor is whether they feel that this is something that truly affects me or not. So if you have, let's say, a parent or just a person who says publicly, I'm against homosexuality or I'm against same-sex marriage publicly, they may go into the booth and vote in favor of those rights if they know someone.
Okay. Reverend Roland Stringfellow again at the Center for Lesbian and Gay Studies at the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley. Ron Buckmeyer's chair of the mathematics department at Occidental College. He also heads the Barbara Jordan Bayard Rustin Coalition. That's a black gay rights group in Los Angeles. Ron Buckmeyer, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Warren.
We heard Reverend Stringfellow say, reluctantly, unhappily, that he thinks there will be what's referred to as an Obama effect. What do you think?
I actually disagree. I think that the data so far that analyzes that black people are more likely to vote conservatively on ballot measures is really contestable. The sample sizes are too small. In Arizona, when there was a similar ballot measure in 2006, the African Americans voted in favor of the ballot measure and the ballot measure failed, they were only 4% of the electorate. In California, they're likely to be 7% of the electorate. I think it's very unlikely that even if there was a preponderance of black people voting for Proposition 8, that they would be the deciding factor in it passing.
Whether or not it passes, the question still remains, what about the African-American population? Again, there is some data from New York University that supports what you're saying, but what about what Reverend Stringfellow says, that there's also a homophobia and religious objection to homosexuality within the black community?
I understand that people have this view that black people are more homophobic than others, but I really think we need to challenge that. I think that comes from an idea that black people are of stereotypes, that black people are hyper-masculine and that therefore homophobia is more present in the black community. But I really feel that when people think about Proposition 8, that it's really writing discrimination into the state constitution. And when black people know that state constitutions have been amended and state laws have been written to discriminate against them, they will not vote to do a similar thing to a group of people in California. Secondly, it's becoming very, very clear now that the Mormon Church is the primary energizing focus behind Proposition 8. They have donated $20 million of the $30 million that are going to support Proposition 8. The Mormon Church has a very bad history with the African-American community, and I don't think that the African-American community will try to enact Mormons' views on marriage for the rest of California.
Do you think people are really aware, though, of where the money's coming from?
Well, we've been trying to publicize the fact that really this attempt by the Proposition 8 folks is really a Mormon-driven message. I think getting the message out that Barack Obama opposes Proposition 8 and black people will be voting for Obama in the 95% percentile and most likely be voting on his position on Proposition 8 and realizing that the Mormon Church is in favor of this, this is all about discrimination, I really think that these views of that there will be an Obama effect that will combine with nascent black homophobia that will cause Proposition 8 to pass are really overblown and not based in fact.
Okay, Ron Buckmeyer again, Professor Ron Buckmeyer, I should say, at the Mathematics Department at Occidental College and the Barbara Jordan Bayard Rustin Coalition, black gay rights group in Los Angeles. I should say we are not debating the merits or demerits of Proposition 8 on this program. We're talking with three people who have views about how it affects the black community and the turnout of African Americans for Barack Obama. Jasmine Kinnick is based in Los Angeles. She writes about the intersection of pop culture and race and class and politics. And she's a contributor to the NPR program News and Notes. Jasmine Kinnick, good to have you back on our program.
Thank you.
Where do you think this idea comes from about hyper-masculinity in the black community?
First of all, I mean, we're talking about it as if there are no black, gay, and lesbian people, as if we're two separate entities. You either have gay people or you have black people. And I'm sorry to say, but there are those of us like myself who fall into both categories. And the second assumption we're making...
I think that's true of our other two guests as well. Go ahead.
Right. And the second assumption that we're making is that everyone who's black is a Christian and is in church every Sunday and reading scripture 7 days a week. And that, quite frankly, is not true either. And I think that's not true either of the people who are going to come out and vote. So, I mean, I think we make an awful lot of assumptions about black people. I think we also sort of make problems where There aren't problems or cause problems to be bigger than what they you know were in the past. And what I mean by that is that in the past, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks, this Proposition 8 issue has become a real big issue within the African-American community, not because of black pastors standing up and speaking out in support of it, but because of the gay community, mostly the white gay community, trying to label African-Americans as homophobic. Now, had that not have happened, I don't know that it would be such a hot topic as it is today. But now it is, because we've had all these stories come out, and now black people are sort of riled up over the issue. So I think there's a myriad of issues to look at, but one thing I want to be perfectly clear of is that all black people are not homophobic, and when you talk about black people, you have to also remember that not everyone is heterosexual, either in the African-American community.
When you say that not everybody goes to church, that's certainly true, but churches are very important politically, or at least traditionally they have been, in the African-American community. What are the pastors saying that you know about, Jasmine Kinnick?
Well, you know, first of all, I don't go to church every Sunday. I'm not one of those African-Americans. But for the pastors that I do know in Los Angeles that are African-American and lead African-American congregations, you know, first of all, it hasn't been anything that they've preached about from the pulpit in the past several weeks. Second of all, most of the pastors that I've come in contact with are basically of the assumption that, you know, we should not be in the business of trying to discriminate against our own. There are several people within Los Angeles and the state of California who have worked very hard at making sure that black people realize and recognize that when you have a proposition like 8, that it doesn't just mean the white gay community. It also means people in your family, people in your congregation, you know, your friends' children. That's something that a lot of us can relate to, because we know someone who is gay. Most times we have someone in our family who is. So I'm not buying this idea that black people are going to go to the polls and vote for Obama, but then also vote in support of Proposition 8. I think it's just I just think it's being blown up into something that completely isn't true.
Jasmine Kinnick, again, with the NPR program News and Notes. Reverend Stringfellow, back to you again at the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley. Do you think that the idea that blacks might vote against this it is, in fact, coming from the white gay community?
Well, I would say that, you know, going back to the issue of information and people being informed, that unless you are really following, you know, the debates around Proposition 8, that what you'll see is what you get on television. The Yes on 8 campaign oftentimes want to paint this issue that all Proposition 8 is all about is teaching same-sex marriage to children. And most of their campaign is, if not all of it, is just fear-based. And so, you know, as the professor had said earlier, that, you know, outlining what Proposition 8 is and is not about, I think is great, and I really do hope people will be informed by that. But in terms of the white gay community, you know, wanting to, I guess, you know, stir things up and so forth, I don't really have a clear answer for that. But what I would say is that oftentimes I believe that you know, African Americans, the voice that they're going to listen to are the voices within their own community.
Mm-hmm. Jasmine Kinnick, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Reverend. We're running short of time. I just wanted to ask Jasmine Kinnick. It certainly would be counterproductive, wouldn't it, if white gays were to perpetrate an idea like that, and African Americans were to see it that way?
Well, I mean, look. You know, we just had this whole incident with the whole Sarah Palin effigy in the news in West Hollywood with a white gay couple, which didn't necessarily go over too well with African Americans here in Los Angeles. For the most part, gay issues have always been seen by blacks as being a white issue. When you turn on television, you see white gay folks. When you read about it in the paper, it's white gay folks. There needs to be more visibility of African-American gay and lesbians in their own community. But more importantly, this message needs to be driven by African-American gays and lesbians and not the white gay community. And unfortunately, that really hasn't happened this go round. So, and that's a little disheartening because there are, you know, California is home to a lot, thousands of African American gays and lesbians.
Ron Buckmeyer, quickly, Professor Buckmeyer, any final comments from you?
Well, as an openly gay black man and chair of a black gay political organization, we on this Saturday, we're going to have black people talking to black people about Proposition 8 at Lucy Florence Coffee House. And that's what we've been doing. We're an organization, black people challenging homophobia in the black community, black gay people challenging homophobia in the black community, and also challenging racism in the gay community at the same time.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for being with us. Ron Buckmeyer, professor at Occidental College, Jasmine Kinnick with NPR's News and Notes, Reverend Roland Stringfellow at the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley. I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/whichwayLA. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
Warren Olney back with Reporter's Notebook on Which Way LA. There are more than 10 million people in Los Angeles County, but just 5 elected supervisors. With both legislative and executive responsibilities, they are some of California's most powerful elected officials. It is so difficult and expensive to run in such enormous districts that election is almost a lifetime job. Vacancies are rare. Now, the second district supervisor, Yvonne Brathwaite-Burke, is stepping down. Two political veterans are in a tight race to replace her, L.A. City Councilman Bernard Parks and State Senator Mark Ridley Thomas. Eddie North Hager is creator of LamertParkBeat.com. That's a community bulletin board for Lamert Park and South Los Angeles. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Warren.
Second district, a lot bigger than Lamert Park in South Los Angeles, runs all the way up to Culver City. It's an enormous area.
Well, and they're in charge of $22.5 billion in the county. And so this is such an important race. And yet it just doesn't seem like we're finding out what these people are really about, what they're really going to do. What we're hearing so much about is who's endorsing them and where their money is coming from. But we're not hearing about how are they going to bring more jobs to the area, how are they going to bring better services to the area. Those are such really the most important issues, but we're hearing about such surface issues when we're trying to get information about this.
This is characteristic of campaigns around here, it seems to me. Do you fault the media or the candidates?
Well, it seems the candidates are driving the messages that the media is responding to. I was just trying to do some research to find out where they're standing on issues, and the best story I came across was one in May from the LA Times where they asked 5 questions to the candidates. They were good questions. The problem was the candidates returned 20 pages of answers. So you can't really get through that to know what they're really trying to say about gangs, about overcrowding of the jail facilities, how they're going to reopen Martin Luther King when you're giving them 3 or 4 pages. And then the stories where you'd hope the reporters are going to ask those tough questions, the tough questions are you going to support unions when all your money is coming from unions? Are you disappointed that the police chief didn't, you know, support your campaign? When for us, that doesn't tell us, how are you going to bring a restaurant or a Trader Joe's or a new supermarket to my neighborhood?
You mentioned the L.A. Times. What about The Wave, La Opinion, The Sentinel? There's a lot of papers in that area. Are they doing any better?
Well, they're trying to do better. Again, the campaigns are, to me, they do seem like they're controlling what's being said, or they're at least responding to issues. It's kind of like that the campaign coverage is modeled on the presidential election coverage. And while it may be very important to know exactly where McCain's money and Barack Obama's money is coming from, here we have 2 candidates running relatively, you know, smaller campaigns that, like you said, this is a lifetime post. Brathwaite-Burke was there for 16 years. She didn't even live in the district for the last few years. And here we're going to put 1 of 2 people who have been lifetime civil servants. They, you know, for Parks and for Ridley Thomas, they've been elected officials for years and years now, and they have a record, and neither of them are standing on it. So it makes it really hard to know who to vote for.
Eddie North Hager, creator of LamertParkBeat.com. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Producers of Which Way LA, Katie Cooper, Francis Anderton, Andrea Brody, Christian Bordahl, Sonia Geis, Gary Scott, Managing Producer Cameron Radziner, Technical Director Mike Newport. Thanks to the John Coltrane family. I'm Orman Alney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.